John Waters' breakout film hit Pink Flamingos came out 50 years ago, and for all its gratuitous sex and graphic content, it was recently chosen by the Library of Congress to join the National Film Registry. John Waters is still trying to break boundaries, just like B.J. Lederman, who writes our theme music. John Waters has written his first novel. It's titled Liar Mouth, a feel-bad romance, and he spoke to NPR's Andrew Limbong about it. Quick caution to our listeners, it's a John Waters story, so it contains graphic sexual language.
There are times when reading the novel Liar Mouth feels like delirium, which is to say, it feels like a John Waters movie. Here's Waters introducing us to his latest batch of freaks.
Marcia Sprinkle is a woman that makes her living stealing suitcases in airports off the carousel.
Simple enough.
With her partner, who is her sexual slave named Daryl, who is her fake chauffeur.
Okay.
His salary is he can have sex with her once a year. And this is that day, but she ain't paying him.
They squat in empty, unused Baltimore McMansions, the way Marcia likes it. She's uptight and wary of any and all bodily functions. Here's Waters reading from the audiobook.
Marcia hates anything old. Antiques, vintage, collectibles. It's all dirty to her. Used, stained with other people's fluids. Children's tears. Unwanted sperm, stray mucus, even unrequired food. Nothing smells here. Odors are an unwanted invasion of her superiority, an interruption to her focused life.
Something happens to them on the job that even Waters doesn't want to get into, and suddenly, Marcia's on the run, Daryl's penis is talking, Marcia's daughter, a trampoline addict, is trying to kill her, and of course, Marcia's distaste for bodies and people she finds beneath her gets tested. Through it all, Waters writes with a sort of glee. You know, you can feel him grinning through the pages of the book.
I just wanted to try something I hadn't done. Same reason I took LSD when I was 70 again. Same reason I hitchhiked across America when I was 66. Why not try to write your first novel when you're in mid-70s? I want to keep trying new things. Dare yourself.
It's an ethos that's been present in his work from his early short films to, of course, Pink Flamingos.
Good morning, Mama. I bet you're hungry.
It's from 1972, and it stars the late drag queen Divine as she proves herself to be the filthiest woman alive against a rival filthy family. The movie is probably most famous for the scene where Divine eats dog poo, but a bunch of other wild stuff happens in the movie, too. Genitalia gets mutilated, animals get sexualized then eaten. I told Waters that I hadn't seen it before, and there was a look of satisfaction on his face when I told him, look, I grew up with a broadband connection in my bedroom, you know, I've seen some stuff, and I didn't think this movie would get me, but it got me, man.
So which part got you the most? I mean,
okay.
I look at some of it and I even think, oh my God.
The part that got me the most was the scene when they're licking everything in the house.
Divine and her son Crackers break into the ritzy house of their enemies and lick everything. Plates, spoons, couches.
Just get your saliva glands going. Real good.
In order to put a curse on their rivals.
That works. Just so you know.
And for all of the film's insistence on pushing boundaries and daring the audience to watch, the movie stood the test of time. Late last year, the Library of Congress entered it into the National Film Registry alongside films like The Long Goodbye and WALL-E. It's due for a big Criterion Collection re-release that includes an essay by critic Howard Hampton.
John Waters' secret throughout his career is really there's not a mean-spiritedness in his movies. He embraces his characters. He loves their dementia. He delights in that, revels in it. But at the end of the day, there's a great feeling for these people.
I asked Waters if the movie, for all of its countercultural and transgressive bona fides, loses something by being given the seal of approval by arguably the most mainstream of film institutions.
No, it gives all young people faith that you can think up the most outrageous thing. I haven't changed. It's just the acceptance of me has changed. And the people in power in the room where it happens are crazy people now from my generation that lasted, that their sense of humor made them the winner.
The intersections of art and irony and acceptability and money have changed in a lot of complicated ways beneath the shadow of Pink Flamingos and the kitsch and camp of its star Divine. Chris Jennings is a photographer and drag king based in Baltimore who says water shaped the type of art they were attracted to.
When I started performing, I did draw a lot from that as far as like, I like kind of making fun of the reason why people are there to see me.
Jennings has spent a lot of time photographing drag shows, and they saw Divine's influence when a performer was really pushing it, daring an audience member to either enjoy the show or leave. Sometimes the audience chose the latter, which is hard for any subculture to sustain.
Drag is in a really interesting trajectory right now. You know, RuPaul's Drag Race has really made drag a mainstream marketable thing for people to do.
Which on the one hand is great, right? Jennings says it is literally, physically safer to be out in drag today than 50 years ago. But where drag was once done freely, expressively in the underground, it's now often performed at brunches for people with money who may or may not be queer or be open to the kind of antics Divine inspires.
The beautiful thing about John Waters' work is that it did mimic that underground feeling that, like, it was just something that existed if you knew it existed. And now that the window has been opened, which means that, like, people kind of have to put their clothes on.
In many ways, this tension of class and culture is in all of Waters' material, from Pink Flamingos to his new book, Liarmouth. But Waters doesn't have much nostalgia for the days where queerness was sequestered to gay bars and certain parts of town.
Like, I don't want my book in the gay section near True Crime by the bathroom in the back. I want it up front with the bestsellers.
But if it's comfort-pushing weirdness you're after, that you have to make happen.
And what we have to do is make gay bars more interesting. They should have.
He went on to list specific suggestions as to how exactly, none of which I was allowed to air. Andrew Limbong, NPR News.